out, and then it's tourist season, so all of those, all of these hotels and guest houses are really full. So what, how is that Radhakanta Prabhu's funeral ceremony?
It was very sweet. A lot of devotees came. It was very nice kirtan. And then I read the message that you sent us just before the lid was put on the coffin. Everyone was very pleased. Then I read the message again at the crematorium. There was another service, and some different people were there. So there were some glorifications of Radhakanta Prabhu. And then at the end again, I read your message.
Manjuali is still a big loss to her, although she understands, you know, like you said, that he's out of his misery, of his physical kind of diseases. You're 62.
He was 62 or she 62?
He was 62. I don't know how old she
was. Probably a little younger.
It was incredible how so many people said that his physical disabilities actually made him focus much more on his Krishna consciousness. And times we met him, or he would send some Lakshmi for Namata books. It was always clearly only speaking about Krishna consciousness and how to, you know, distribute books, or how he could send some of his savings. And we met his extended family, his brothers and his brothers' wives, a lot of whom are professional. And he himself was a graduate from Vallabhvidyanagar University, where my father studied also. And we have a beautiful ISKCON Mandir there now in that village. It's a whole university town. 30,000 people, is full of students. Now where they have Gorati in our Mandir, you know, 500-600 students come every evening. So he studied there so many years ago.
It's 6:30.
So he was a very educated, professional man, but it never...
He was very humble.
Very
humble.
He was
a humble man. Yeah, when your Prabhupada said that, so when you lose your body, then you have nothing else to be proud of, then either you become agnostic, or even worse, or you really depend on Krishna, because it becomes obvious that sense gratification is no longer an option in life. Whether it's subtle or gross, there's nothing really to be gotten out of this body or things relation to the body. And people then become, the tendency is to become more Krishna conscious, more dependent on Krishna. And that seems like a strategy that Krishna employs with everyone. It's something that everyone can look forward to. And that's why Prabhupada was there to even show the example. So what, he became completely infirm, bedridden, and in a situation like that, it gives opportunity for others to render service, and it gives one the opportunity to just really go within, because, you know, the pleasures of eating sleeping or interacting with others, if that's completely taken away, then all you can do is just go internally and be absorbed in Krishna consciousness, or give Krishna consciousness to others if they come for it, like the devotees were around Prabhupada. And it happens to everyone. Prabhupada said, nothing will happen to you. And Krishna used that to force you to become Krishna conscious. We're very sentimental, and Krishna's not. And so all of the things that we have in relation to this body, sooner or later they're taken away. That's why it's better to be practice Krishna consciousness seriously while actually the faculties are there. It is also maybe more difficult at that time. I mean, you have lots of experience with what's on people's minds when they're very sick.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when they're terminally sick.
There's a more interesting phenomenon with younger people that we're encountering now, where they get what would be terminal disease, but they're cured. So they like have a second life, and then they don't know what to do with it, and they don't want it, because they're just so lost for where they, I have several patients now like that. It's very complex because they don't necessarily come forward themselves, but the family come on their behalf, like their partners or their mothers. If they died, it would have been easier for them. But they haven't died, so now they've got to face living, and all the medical treatment is finished. And the medical people have done what they can.
When you're a child, you don't have a choice about living or not, and you don't even think about it. But now when you're an adult, and thinking, you know, what is going to be the purpose? Because they go through a lot of soul-searching. When you say, it's finished, you're going to die. There's a good chance that you're going to die. And then again, you're living, but they don't have any purpose for living. And people really need to be given a purpose for life.
And they're so destructive because they destroy everything as they had before. So they no longer want their relationship, they no longer want their family, and the family just don't know what to do because they've struggled with them to keep them going. So there's so much anger and resentment, but they don't have a purpose, a higher purpose to channel. So those situations are very, very difficult. And yet they open up, I mean, the partner that I'm working with, she's becoming so much more spiritual.
The partner that you're working with?
I'm not working with the patient because some of them are not necessarily registered with us, but I'm working with the partner of this young boy and his mother. But it's not just the one example. The other one, the other tied in with this is also people who look to... this dignitas, there was a musician from England, his wife and him came, and they both jointly committed, went to this dignitas place in Switzerland, you know. And they just, put an end to their physical bodies. It's just, and the students are all aware of this. A lot of young people are very much in tune with these things. So life and death is quite a...
People need a purpose in life, and... One, if they're a little educated, if they're a little thinking people, then they come to the conclusion that they can't. There has to be a little more than just eating and sleeping, and ultimately that you die, and then what happens to everything? And then now I have to die twice. I've already died psychologically, I've already given everything up, and now I'm going to have to go through it again. So, but if they're given a purpose, yeah, the purpose in life is to come to understand who you are, come to understand your relationship with the world around you and the Creator. And that's what we have to give people, that real value. Lifestyle.
Radha Kanta Prabhu and his wife, they knew that. For years she was just completely serving him. And if you go to their house, it's such an ordinary little house. They were just day in and day out, day in and day out, day in and day out, just struggling with the same old thing. But they didn't. He didn't want to go to Digby's house to commit suicide. She never grumbled a moment. They had that tolerance to just, for years.
Well, because they got their strength from Krishna consciousness, they got their strength from chanting, and you can't, this whole assisted suicide, you can't evade. Maybe you can evade it in this life, but then you'll have to get it the next life, because if there's a certain amount of suffering that's due you, don't take the compound, you can't avoid it. You'll get it. If you don't get it now, then you get it there. But you get it. So, we had, you didn't know Archa Vigraha. She was, she lived in Vrindavan in the house next to her. She was this South African artist. You've seen her pictures of Prabhupada. And that picture of Prabhupada, where Prabhupada's chatter is the Hare Krishna mantra, but she did that. Anyway, but she had cancer and then she moved to Vrindavan and she was still getting chemotherapy in Delhi every once in a while. And I think she lived for 2 years or so and then she died. But I don't know, some months before she died, I wasn't there when she died. Then I was there reading to her and talking, and she said that she used to pray to Krishna because she was in pain to, you know, let her die. But then she realized that actually praying to Krishna to become free from pain is, you know, one liberation. Krishna's giving her the pain, so why should she pray for him to die? She's not going to be able to die until she's gone through as much as Krishna wants her to go through. And at that time, she's not going to die any sooner, and she's not going to die any later.
So she accepted it.
She accepted it, and when she accepted it, then the condition changed. Because then Krishna's purpose was sort of served. So we don't, we can't avoid what's due to us. Krishna can change it if he sees that, you know, the lessons learned, the person actually understands. And we're willing to accept that.
Raj, you mentioned being sentimental. And my experience of our work is that it was a lot of sentimentality. And built around this false sentimentality, and the focus becomes very much a sense-based, like relief of pain, that becomes the first and foremost, and the whole focus in the person's care now has become, stop this symptom, stop that symptom, but actually not focusing on the spirit of the person there.
Yeah. Well, it's symptomatic of everything that's going on in the world today. When I meant sentimentality, it's like death. I mean, we don't want anyone to die. But Krishna doesn't care. He kills everyone anyway. So he's not, because that's the cold hard fact of life. And similarly, we like things to be sort of politically correct and sociologically correct, but the laws of karma, laws of the world, they act anyway, whatever people think, whatever people want, however nicely people would like things to happen. And then, particularly in relationship to devotees, Krishna's personally managing things through devotees, but he's also very determined. You know, when he wants something, he sees that something is good for devotee, no matter how our sentiments are, Krishna's, you know, like with Radhakanta Prabhu, he was really crippled. And the natural sentiment is to feel sorry and so on. But to someone who's allowing this to happen, and he's not being sentimental about it, he has great love, but still he's managing and organizing this person's karma in such a way that it's worked out in the best way possible, that if his consciousness is good, is also the best for his Krishna consciousness and will bring about the type of realization that will come to his success. By sentimentality, I mean that sometimes we'll tend to act on sentiment which may not be in the best interest of the person. And this is what you're saying, is that you deal with physical symptoms, but actually it may not necessarily correlate to a person's best interest. Instead of getting away from the real duty of a carer, which is to actually care for a person's soul. And of course we want to care for the body as well, and something like pain management is something that individuals need to decide for themselves, how much they're willing to take or not willing to take. Jayananda Prabhu, you know, he's obviously on the Rath Yatra. So he had leukemia. He was in phenomenal pain. He wouldn't accept any kind of medication. He wouldn't accept anything. Maybe sometimes he would scream, but he wouldn't accept anything. That's an individual decision. You know, for me to function, I need to take a couple of sulfadines every once in a while, otherwise I get too distracted by the pain. If it came to a point where I had nothing else to do except just concentrate on that, I may decide differently.